Thanks for having me, Gavin.
So our listeners are familiar with some of the big legislative news in Colorado from 2019, and I'm excited to speak with you about the policymaking in other Western states regarding renewable energy. It seems like elected officials have determined that clean energy is good for the economy and the environment, and you call it a regional trend. I want to ask you about Washington, Nevada, New Mexico, but let's start with Colorado. Can you talk about the significance of a major utility, Xcel Energy, planning to eliminate carbon dioxide emissions by 2050 here?
I mean, I think Xcel Energy's move is a signal that a signal of something that we've seen sort of coming out as part of this conversation, which is that these state-level renewable energy mandates, and there are 29 of those now nationwide, have really driven the market toward renewable energy. And so now we're seeing the market say, we want to get on board with this sort of even ahead of renewable energy laws from the state. So that's, I think that's the big signal from Xcel Energy, that they are transitioning to reduce not just carbon dioxide, but sulfur dioxide and a number of other particulate pollutants that are really going to help address ozone pollution and climate change and a bundle of issues in Colorado.
And then other power companies across the West are moving in this direction too, right?
Right, right. We've seen, even in New Mexico, we've seen PNM, the Public Service Company of New Mexico, get on board with the Energy Transition Act in New Mexico and saying that they want to, they acknowledge that this is a challenge, but that these are worthy goals and affordable and attainable goals.
And you mentioned Idaho Power in your article too.
I did, yes, that's right. It's kind of, in the last 10 years or so, we've seen the price of solar energy come down from something like 20 to 25 cents per kilowatt hour to less than 3 cents per kilowatt hour. And it's just making it a really easy sell for some of these companies.
Yeah, listeners are aware of the climate impacts of clean energy and the environmental reasons to move away from fossil fuels. But it does seem like a big part of the momentum right now is the economic realities of clean energy. What is it that has cause solar and wind to become cost competitive with dirtier sources?
I mean, there have been federal subsidies, there have been tax credits, there's been a lot of investment in innovation, and the technology has improved. Windmills now are much bigger and more efficient than they were 10 or 20 years ago, and so that's helped drive all of this. There are some federal subsidies at work, and I think it's also, we've seen a number of people step up and say, I'm willing to pay more for solar and wind power and get on board with some of these clean energy campaigns. There are 100 cities around the nation that have committed to 100% renewable or 100% clean energy. And that, I think, is, you know, it's a standard supply and demand thing that's just sort of driven the price down.
So you mentioned that there are now 29 states with renewable energy mandates. Let's review some of the latest action from this year. What happened in the New Mexico legislature where you live this session?
Yeah, New Mexico passed the Energy Transition Act, and it maps out a plan to sort of ratchet down our coal-fired power sources to 50% clean energy by 2030 and 100% carbon-free energy by 2045. There are some tiered phases in there because we have both investor-owned utilities and co-op utilities, and it does leave a window for 20% of the state's power to come from nuclear power. I think this rhetoric has been sort of an important distinction that's emerged in the last in this last wave of bills that we talk about. Clean energy and renewable energy, and those have sort of been synonymous in the past, but now we're seeing that clean energy includes natural gas, even coal with carbon capture and sequestration technology and nuclear power. And so that's New Mexico's plan, is to be 100% carbon-free by 2045, which will include nuclear power. And that's a hot-button issue in New Mexico, but
no
here
kidding.
We are.
And speaking of nuclear being a hot-button issue, Washington State, of course, has continued problems with the Hanford site and of course the closer proximity to Fukushima and the Pacific Ocean. But Washington State also they did the same thing, right? With the 100% clean energy by 2045.
That's right.
And so then California established its own renewable energy requirement last year. How about our other Pacific Ocean bordering state, Oregon? Is there any news on the cap and trade efforts there?
So that bill has been going through public meetings and work sessions with with lawmakers. It just moved out of its, I think, out of its first committee and into a second committee today. So it's ticking forward slowly. We haven't seen firm action, but there's still time.
And you spoke to several experts for your story, including the American Council on Renewable Energy, Western Resource Advocates, and the Center for the New Energy Economy at Colorado State University. Did anyone allude to cap and trade being part of this regional trend, or not so much? I thought cap and trade was more out of favor these days.
I think the attention has really moved elsewhere at this point. Oregon's bill is a bit of an outlier, and the conversation is focusing a lot more on just ramping up renewable energy and finding other ways to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. That's the bill that did pass in Colorado, from what I understand, is one that sets goals for reducing greenhouse gases rather than specifically targeting the energy sector.
And speaking of experts, another group you spoke to is environmental entrepreneurs in Nevada. A report by E2 released during the legislative session showed clean energy jobs on the rise. You spoke to Susan Nadell of Environmental Entrepreneurs about the impact of that research on the policy making. What did she say?
Right. So Environmental Entrepreneurs is an organization that has really been making the case that we can pass these initiatives and that they are both good for the economy and good for the environment. They're not, that's not a mutually exclusive proposal. And so Susan's point was that they had come out with this report the morning that Nevada started considering a bill to commit to renewable energy and clean energy sources that showed that they'd had some of the leading job growth in the nation over the previous year. It was, I think, 32%. And it just was a right message at the right place at the right time. They were walking the halls that morning as legislators were just starting to consider this bill, and it ended up moving forward to pass unanimously.
I mean, to have both chambers of the Nevada legislature approve a plan for clean energy unanimously, that's a big story. I don't think most of our listeners heard that even happened. And half of Nevada's energy will have to come from renewable sources by 2030. That's also a pretty short timeline.
That is. The lawmakers there had the support of a ballot initiative that had gone up, I think, just last fall. But in recent history, voters in Nevada had actually committed to 50% by 2050. So they knew that there was public support for this kind of initiative. And the Sierra Club, they didn't end up getting cited in that story, but they talked a lot about how a local group of Paiutes have come down and talked to Nevada lawmakers about the effects of living downwind of a 557-megawatt generating station and the impacts of all of that burning coal on their homes, and that had really helped drive this conversation.
My guest is journalist Elizabeth Miller. We're talking about her recent piece for Bitterroot called Clean Energy Breezes Through Western Statehouses. Talk about the national context that has led so many Western states to take the lead on renewable energy development. I mean, under Obama, there was the Clean Power Plan, which were proposed restrictions on carbon emissions, but the president repealed that, right?
It's currently tied up in court. Yes, it was one of the first things that the Trump administration moved to repeal. And the Clean Power Plan set some of the first limits on carbon pollution from power generating sources in the country. And it was among the first things to go. And so some of the people that I've spoken to have talked about, you know, really feeling like in the absence of leadership from the federal government on addressing climate change and what's, you know, a pending climate crisis, the states are really taking the reins and stepping up and filling a vacuum.
The person you spoke to from Western Resource Advocates had a great quote. Do you have that in front of you?
I do. Yes, I spoke with the deputy director of the Clean Energy Program at Western Resource Advocates, and he said that part of what's driving this current trend is the fact that the feds have pretty much vacated the field.
And he said it's not that a federal program isn't the preferred way to go, but it's not the only way. And it seems like that's obviously a strong kicker to your story, Elizabeth. President Trump promised repeatedly to revive the coal industry in this country. What is the forecast for coal at this point?
I mean, we're looking at infrastructure that was installed several decades ago and is, on a practical scale, it's aging. And it's aging out actually on the same timeline as a lot of these clean energy bills are ramping up. So 2040, there's an estimate out of the Center for the New Energy Economy at Colorado State University, which is, of course, where former Governor Bill Ritter has landed that says that by 2030, as much as half of the coal capacity in the West will cease operations, and that by 2050 we could see 90% of the coal-fired capacity aged out. So that's one of these market forces that's sort of driving this change toward clean energy, that these coal-fired power plants are going to need to be replaced. There needs to be some sort of proactive planning for what's going to step in their place, and now's the time to dictate that it be wind, solar, and hydroelectric, electric, and biomass.
The policy advisor at CSU who you spoke to said there's no doubt there will be some pain felt in some communities, but there's also no doubt there are going to be tremendous opportunities economically. You also report, Elizabeth, that nationwide, the clean energy sector employed more than 3 million people in the last year, with just over 1 million jobs in fossil fuels. So this is also a jobs question, isn't it?
It is, definitely. And one of the interesting things that's come out of this latest round of legislation in Colorado and New Mexico in particular is an effort to help some of these communities that have been dependent on coal mines and coal power plants for high-paying jobs and economic drivers in those areas. Really helps them plan for transition into the future. And some of these bills are actually dictating that the new power that's installed in state be installed where the old coal-fired power plant was. And so that's going to bring in some jobs, bring in some new spending. One thing to note is that those are not typically long-term jobs, but neither are natural gas plant jobs. So we've been talking about phasing out coal. Natural gas, wind, and solar are all sort of on the table as leading contenders to step in to fill that. But natural gas power plants would go back to a fossil fuel-driven sort of familiar face for the power sector. But a lot of what goes into running them now is automated, and so they don't employ very many people after construction. And the same goes for renewable power. Solar and wind employ a lot of people in constructing jobs, and then those jobs are going to taper out. So it's really a time that these communities are going to have to spend dedicating to figuring out what they want to do for economic drivers moving into the future. And I know we're having some of those conversations in New Mexico. I'm sure people in Colorado are as well.
Yeah, thanks for touching on that nuance. My guest has been reporter Elizabeth Miller. Her recent story for Bitterroot is Clean Energy Breezes Through Western State Houses. We'll link to it at kdnk.org. Thanks so much for speaking to us, Elizabeth.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Gavin.